So this is Gino Sasani with Upcoming Disc, and we're talking with David Barrett here, who directed a movie we just recently reviewed, Fire with Fire. He also did a lot of TV shows we're going to talk about later. And I guess I want to welcome you, David. Welcome to Upcoming Disc, and thanks for getting with us.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate the time you spent to review the movie.
Well, you know, it's our pleasure. Everybody here who works here loves movies. That's what it's all about. None of us are making any money off of this deal, so it's the pleasure of movies, and when you put out a good one, you make our job a lot easier, trust me.
Well, appreciate that.
Well, let's get a little bit into your background first. I know that you started in the business doing a lot of stunt work, and also your family. I remember you were telling me something about your father in a rocket car. Can you tell us that story?
Yes, I can. I come from a legendary stunt family. My father was his name's Stan Barrett. He was Burt Reynolds and Paul Newman's stunt double. So he did movies like Hooper. In fact, Hooper was a bit based on my dad, Jan Michael Vincent character.
Wow.
And then he, you know, he did the Cannonball Run, Smokey and the Bandit, mm-hmm. With Hal Needham. Hal Needham was the highest grossing director for 5 years straight, he and Burt Reynolds.
Wow.
He was a stuntman, started as a stuntman, and then ultimately, you know, went to writing and directing his own movies. Then Hal owned a rocket car called the Budweiser Rocket Car. It was built by Bill Fredericks. He was the special effects guy on Hal's movies. For example, in Hooper, you know, they had a scene in Hooper where a Trans Am gets jumps across a river, a huge ravine, probably 200-300 feet across, something
mm-hmm.
crazy. And they had a rocket engine on it. Bill built that. So Bill then had the idea to build a rocket car. Hal Needham drove it once, or attempted to break the land speed record a few times, and the last time ending up chute not deploying and him flying through the desert, and it was an incredible mm-hmm. feat that he lived through.
Wow.
But he decided not ever to drive the rocket car, so he hired my father, who then, with some modifications to the car, ended up driving the rocket car to be the first man to go Mach 1 on land, 739 miles an hour.
Wow, and what was his top speed?
739 miles an hour.
Oh, so that was his top speed?
Was his top speed, and there was 18 different runs to get to that point.
Okay.
So, you know, Chuck Yeager, Phil Knight, Paul Newman, a bunch of people were there to obviously watch it. But it was the first man to do to go Mach 1 on land. It's a pretty amazing feat, and he held the record for 19 years.
19 years? That's
yeah.
impressive.
Yeah, so then he went on to do NASCAR, you know, he's a NASCAR
mm-hmm.
driver, and,
sure.
and myself, growing up in the business, I, you know, knew I wanted to be a director from an early, you know, early point in my
uh-huh.
childhood. You know, my friends always say, you know, you said this since you've been 7 years old, that this is what you wanted to do, and it was, so every decision I made, it was specific into reaching and obtaining the goal of directing.
Sure. And what kind of directors did you look up to at that point when you were building this love yourself to do it?
Well, you know, I was on the set of all sorts of TV shows, like, you know, from Dukes of Hazzard to Harry Best, who played Roscoe P.
Cool.
Coltrane, that would take me through scenes, who he's now an acting coach, and, you know, I got to learn a lot about the actor's approach, and then
mm-hmm.
I had this guy, Jerry Jamison, who did a lot of TV, who I'd ask a lot of questions of, and then,
mm-hmm.
You know, ultimately, I became a stuntman. I was a professional motocross racer at 15, and, you know, my mother was a top athlete in the world. She was a world champion ski racer at youngest ever at 15 years old. And I was born and raised in Mammoth Mountain, California, so having the athletic background that I had, and then, you know, the imagination that I had, I would start to, you know, worked on ski films. I worked on, was one of the, I created some of the Winter X Games sports.
Wow.
And having the run of the ski area, my grandfather, Dave McCoy, developed Mammoth and owned Mammoth. So
mm-hmm.
any bright idea I had, I kind of would leverage my relationship with my grandfather into doing something crazy on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
So by being raised up there, I became, you know, professional motocrosser and skier and snowboarder my dad being a race car driver, I was driving 100-mile-an-hour go-karts. The transition into stunts was quite easy. My first, big job was Aspen Extreme. So I got to watch how they shot a lot of that movie in an arena that I knew a ton about. So in terms of the story, it was about Patrick Hasberg was a ski instructor, and he moves out west, and you know, the rest is kind of the what Aspen Extreme is about. But I knew the content of the story very well. I knew the mountain life, and I asked very specific questions. And in fact, they shot in Aspen, and they were running up issues in Aspen. And I said, you know, I think we can tell this story a lot better in Mammoth. And I was just a stuntman, lowly stuntman. Mm-hmm. So I said, and here's why. And here's why Mammoth could accommodate the story in these different areas. And ultimately, you know, that first job I got looked at, not just as a stuntman, but as a storyteller.
Sure.
And it really bought me a lot of credibility with that stunt coordinator and with those producers. Then I did a series called BL Striker with my dad. Mm-hmm. He was the stunt coordinator on it. And what's odd is last week when I was directing Blue Bloods, I put two and two together because Tom Selleck was a producer on that show.
It
was one of my first shows I had ever worked on, because he heard about this big action scene we just shot on Blue Bloods, and it was amazing, and blah, blah, how did I do it? And I said, well, Tom, I was a stuntman. You were? Because no one thinks I was a stunt guy, because I enjoy working with actors so much, and I love telling the story. So I said, you know, Tom, my first job, and I never want people to know that I was a stunt guy, because then they just think you only care about action.
Right.
So I said, Tom, my first job was on a series you produced, BL Striker. So it's kind of neat, 20 years later, I get to tell Tom Selleck my first job was more or less working for him.
And now he's working for you.
Well,
okay.
Well, kind of. Not really. I mean, Tom Selleck is the star of the show, and it's so neat to be able to collaborate and to work with. You know, he is one of the best actors I've ever worked with.
Well, you know what we're going to talk about, the TV shows. What I'm going to do is I'm going to turn over to Jeremy next. I know he has some questions he wants to get on the record for Fire with Fire, which is the movie that you directed that we had a chance to review recently. And so if you don't mind, let me turn over and I'll come right back and we'll talk about some of the TV shows, if that's okay.
Great, great.
And how you doing, How you doing, Mr. Barrett?
I'm great, Jeremy. Thank you. How you doing?
I'm good, good. Well, first I want to start off by saying how much I really enjoyed your movie.
Appreciate that.
And I wanted to ask a few questions about, I want to start off with casting. Can you tell me how some of the actors became involved?
Well, you know, the key to getting these kind of movies off the ground is getting an actor who, you know, attached that has some foreign value. Or who other actors want to work with. And, you know, I had a few meetings set up with different actors that could get this movie greenlit, but the one that I had had a terrific meeting with was Josh Duhamel. You know, what was very interesting about this movie is it's far different from anything that Josh has ever done. And, you know, I described who this character was to Josh. I described the character
from
the point that he was 7 years old till the very day this movie starts. And I gave him this extremely detailed backstory as to why he is the way he is, why he takes the job why he's a fireman, why he's single, why he would why he finds the Rosario character attractive, and I got him to fall in love with his history, with his character's history. And I didn't talk about the moments that I was going to need necessarily from him. I just let him know who that character was, informed him completely of him, and told him essentially his interaction with these other characters, what was to be expected, and my ideas there, and what I wanted to do with this character is to get it to the most raw place I could possibly get it to. And I told him, you know, listen, if it's not real, these performances, it's not relatable. If it's not relatable, it's not commercial.
Very true.
So once I got Jeremy on, he had to do the movie. I mean, I walked out of the meeting before I got to my car. He had called the agents. The agents called us and said he's in. So that, I think, set the script apart from the many that these producers have on their desks to see the enthusiasm that Jeremy had. And then we went to go and cast, you know, Bruce Willis. He had a very short window, and he'll do these movies that for a very short amount of time if he can fit them in his schedule, because he loves to work.
Right.
Talk to him about this character and the backstory to this character and his connection. You know, it was kind of unfair what I did, almost, because I talked in such detail, again, from the time that character was 7 years old, to the relationship that he had with his partner that Hagen, Vincent D'Onofrio's character, had killed, that I think he got really excited about it. And ultimately, you know, we had, probably he's in the movie about 20 pages, I would imagine, something like that. But once you get Bruce Willis on, then it becomes a whole different ballgame. You know, the movie's greenlit, and then Vincent D'Onofrio, you know, I had to convince him, because he's had a very busy schedule and hasn't had a lot of time with his family and wasn't going to do the movie, and I begged my producers to get me on the phone with him. And again, I got him so interested in the backstory of this character, not necessarily what was on the page today, but what backstory and what history he could associate his behavior with the dialogue that existed on the page. And everything made sense to him, and by the end of the conversation, he said he would do it. So the same thing with Rosario. You know, it was, you have to get these actors, you have to earn what's on the page in terms of the dialogue with backstory. And once you do that as a director, and if they see the same kind of movie you see, and if that inspires them, they will become a part of it. I mean, we had a great cast. We had Julian McMahon. We had Tom Berry of Cold Case. We had an incredible amount of
cameo
people who cast who worked for nothing.
I totally agree. I was watching it, and I could just see the enormous talent pool that you had for this film. And I can see that you clearly have a talent for painting a picture so enticing for as character-wise.
Yeah, well, you have to do it in order to inspire these guys, because all of them are such great actors. They don't need the job. So that's the toughest part, is getting them to really see the character in the 30 minutes you have with a meeting over the phone. And then you got to get the agents a response out of the actors that the agents are like, oh, this is going to be great. And get the agents working for you. So that's probably the toughest part of directing, I got to be honest, to get the ball and momentum going.
I see. Another notable thing for me while watching this was this journey that Jeremy Coleman went through, Josh Duhamel's character, you know, in the name of protecting someone he loved. I mean, he actually threw himself deep into the darkness and did things he before probably didn't think himself capable of in order to save someone he loved.
Yeah, you know, that was really what I wanted to do with the movie, is make it as real as I could. Because you take, and I told, you know, Josh this, I said, look, we're going to take you to a place I've never seen you in anything. And I said, and I need you to go to the depths, and I need you to live this. And we need to earn the moment that you're going to cut somebody's finger off. And, you know, when we did this, I wanted him to make it as real as possible. For example, the first time in the alleyway with Vinnie Jones, he that fight, they wanted a big, so how are we going to choreograph this fight? And the stunt coordinator had laid out this big choreographed kind of fight. And I said, I need it to feel real as it can possibly feel. So let me walk through the beats with you guys, but let's miss more than we hit. Let's slap when you need to slap. Let's make this as David and Goliath as possible. So that's what we did, you know, and ultimately Jeremy slips, grabs him in a headlock, slips, and he hits his head on the side of a dumpster. And that's how he kills the first guy. He doesn't know what to do. Then the second guy's killed. Third guy's killed by his gun, but he's being, you know, he's running away for his life when this car's going down a narrow alleyway. Then he plans to kill somebody. Well, the white supremacist with his, when he ends up cutting his fingers off and he throws up. I said, every scene, how do I make this real? How do I make this affect this character in a way that he's never been affected before? Because as a fireman, you see death. You see people hurt. You're calm. It's a part of the job. But he can't be that way in this movie.
Right.
So to see him kind of just peel away the onion and see somebody do the polar opposite of what he's built to do was tough, and it was tough for Jeremy too, for Josh. You know, he really dug in and did the homework and did an amazing job, I think, with his character, because it could have been very, very flat and predictable.
Right, right. So can you tell me how you actually became involved with the picture?
I was doing a second unit for a friend on a movie called The Double, and one of the managers, Andrew Dean, was working of the writers, and he produced the movie The Double, saw some second unit that I shot for them, and said, "Why are you not doing a movie?" I said, "Well, you know, I do second unit on movies. I had pitched a couple of movies, but I just haven't had the representation." And he said, "Well, let me get you a couple scripts and let's see if we can get you a movie." So he gave me this script from one of the writers he represented, and then got Josh on board, and Matthew Rhodes, another producer, really got the ball moving and got this script to Emmett Furla. So it was a combination of a lot of experience from other producers and that got this movie going.
All right, so I want to ask you about the big fire stunt at the climax of the film.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what all went into making that happen?
Well, you know, that was a very, very ambitious scene. We didn't really have a visual effects coordinator on the movie. We just didn't have the budget. And our special effects guy, I think we had about 6 flame bars, which is incredible, because that's nothing in terms of the area that we cover and the story we had to tell with the fire. I mean, myself and the DP operated all the shots. We had, you know, Alpine Stars, fire suits, race car suits that we were in operating every shot. I mean, we could not do a second take on shots. And if we did, we weren't going to get the sequence because we absolutely had no time. We're shooting in July. It's 108 degrees and 100% humidity, and we're doing a fire movie in a warehouse. It was the worst case scenario. Thank God we had Rosario and Josh. I mean, Rosario was incredible. She had nothing on her. I mean, she got hurt a couple of times. I mean, and she never complained. That woman is incredible. Actress, work ethic. If I didn't have the cast that I had, there's no way we could have pulled this movie off. No way. But, you know, we built a set, a fire set, where we had the ceiling didn't touch the wall, so we had some ventilation in there, because I wanted to, you know, when building the set, I said, we need to make this as if it's a ride at Universal. We can just burn it over and over and over. So we drywalled the set, and then we strategically placed the flame bars in order to give the illusion, and at least the lighting on the walls was organic, and then I was going to try to augment, you know, a visual effect flame in front of the lens to give it that claustrophobic feeling of the fire, getting closer and closer, the jeopardy of the fire.
Well, Mr. Barrett, I must tell you that was a very impressive stunt, and I was very impressed. So
well, thank
I'm gonna
you very
I'm gonna
much.
turn you back over to Gina so we can get some more background on your TV history and what. But I just like to say I actually saw the pilot for Arrow, and I gotta tell you that got me completely hooked on the show.
Well, that's terrific. David Nutter directed the pilot.
And you did the second episode, Honor Thy Father, correct?
Yes, yes. The pilot, David Nutter directed, and he is just phenomenal. I mean, he's every pilot he directs goes to series. And it's, you know, quite scary to follow a guy who is that great at pilot directing.
Well, you did an incredible
You know, the first
job.
Episode is a make-or-break situation for an episodic guy like myself to come in and follow him. They have a lot more time and a lot more money, but they also have to set the look. But that first episode's really important to deliver, and it's a bit daunting to follow him, but I'm glad you enjoyed that, you know, Arrow. It's a great show, and it's an honor to follow somebody like Nutter.
All right. I'm going to turn you back over to Gino. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Well, David, I'm glad he got into kind of Arrow because I wanted to talk about the television situation. I have to say, in looking at your IMDb credits of the various TV shows you have, I'm one of these people who thinks there's a lot of wasteland on television, a lot of junk on television. But I look at the shows that you've done, and if you look at the reviews we've done on them before I even talk to you, they're constantly the kind of shows that I do recommend watching. Shows like Blue Bloods, shows like Once Upon a Time, like The Mentalist and Castle. These are the rare shows that are actually pretty good. How is it that you manage to get on so many quality television shows?
You know, I'm very fortunate early in my career to have caught the eye of some very talented producers and execs. You know, Kim Metcalf has been instrumental in my career as an executive. I got my first Bruckheimer show, Without a Trace, mm-hmm. from her suggestion, and then from there, you know, I met Jonathan Lippman, who produces all of Bruckheimer shows, and was able to get into that family, and then, you know, Warner Brothers also was very helpful, like Susan Rovner, who's the head of development, mm-hmm. ended up really being instrumental in my career and helping me. You know, they bought a show called The Mountain that was based on my life in Mammoth that was on the CW.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really quality producers that you end up, if you can catch their eye, their standards are always high, and if you can, you know, always deliver for them, you'll end up working a fair amount. And for me, you know, I every episode is, I treat it like it's my last. Every episode has to be better than the last one. Or else you really don't work in this town.
Well, and television's got to be difficult in the sense that you're not in as complete control because you have to honor what's come before. You have the cast that's already pretty much established for you. You have a mythology or an arc that you have to fit into. How does that make your job so much more difficult, or do you like it that way?
You know, it is tough because there's so many different directors going in and out. You're really just a guest.
Right.
You may be the director, but you are a guest on that show. And for me, going from show to show to show, how do I set myself apart from the other directors? How do I make myself an asset to that particular show? You have to do it from a production standpoint. You have to do it from a storytelling standpoint. And you have to do it in a way that you can also inspire the actors and crew around you.
Right.
If you don't, you're not really asked back. Or if you are, it's just because you've done the show. And that's the key to longevity in this business, you know, is really doing your homework. So, for example, my day, I start shooting tomorrow. I have a new script coming out tomorrow that I will study. And I've now watched every episode of Blue Bloods twice.
Right.
My next show is Once Upon a Time. I have three shows I need to catch up on and scripts that I like that mm-hmm. I need to read so that when I get on those shows, I'm up to speed on everything. And that's really tough to do because my day tomorrow will be a 15-hour day.
Right.
Once I'm done with this series or this episode, I'll be prepping another one, Once Upon a Time, and I'll be editing this one at night. And then I go to The Mentalist. So during this time, I'm trying to catch up. I haven't been to Mentalist in 2 years because of schedule conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
I have to watch all of The Mentalist I've missed, which is probably now 32 or 34.
Right. A lot of episodes.
That's 34 hours of television.
Right.
So on top of prepping an episode, on top of shooting, you know, shooting an episode and posting an episode, it gets to be, I have absolutely zero time. And then, you know, I'm trying to get another movie off the ground, Sanctuary with Mandalay, and
right.
It's really tough to keep reinventing yourself and feeling like you're giving each show 100%.
Well, I think you're drawn, from what I can see, if there's a pattern, you're drawn to strong leads, I think, because if I look at these shows you do, every one of these series that I've seen you direct, the one thing they have in common are very strong leads. You got Tom Selleck on Blue Bloods, Nathan Fillion, Simon Baker. They all seem to have very solid and you know, tough leads.
I do. That's interesting. I never really thought about that. You know, I think it's true. I really do enjoy working with the 800-pound gorilla, I guess you could say. You know, Tom is no C student by any stretch of the imagination.
No, he's not.
He is so on top of storytelling and blocking and shooting and what really his brand is.
Mm-hmm.
And when he has a note, it just isn't... It isn't... ego-driven. It's always story, episode, series-driven.
Well, that's how you get to be that powerhouse lead.
Yeah, and Simon Baker as well. Same thing. Nathan Fillion, same thing. Those
mm-hmm.
guys will come and fill... They can fill a moment. They actively listen. They are an absolute pleasure to work with, and it's really tough to come to work on a Simon Baker show or a Tom Selleck show, and how am I going to inspire this guy? I'm going to have to outthink him. I'm going to have to think of something completely out of the box to get him to go, this guy's different. Now, that takes a lot of homework, and at the end of the day, you know, it's tough to be the guy who goes, I got a new way of doing this.
Right.
Because everybody, until you earn their respect, you're just auditioning for the job.
Exactly. And with those kind of leads, it must be hard to do that. But you've obviously done that because you've come back and back. And even Once Upon a Time, I realize that's more of an ensemble than the others. But Robert Carlyle, for instance, is an amazing actor.
I only had one scene with Robert. But I am so excited to work with him. You know, look, the thing where I got this, I have to confess, it's grown up with Paul Newman and talking about character with him and then talking about how actors work. You know, I'll tell you one story I did Without a Trace, and Anthony LaPaglia was a fairly strong point of view.
Yeah.
And directors were really, really intimidated by him. And of course, I had the episode, my very first Bruckheimer show. It was a top 10 show. If I screwed that up, I was done. I had the episode that aired before Christmas, prepped before Christmas, shot after Christmas. So I had the whole 2 weeks to, you know, absolutely stress myself out. I mean, I went to the locations 100 times, I re-blocked the shots, I was over-prepared. And I was so nervous. I called Paul and I said, Paul, what... this actor has a very strong opinion, and if you don't have the same ideas or he smells fear, he will eat you for lunch. And I said, how do I handle this? And he said, you know, you go to him and you ask him, how do you like to work? What do you need to know? Do you need to know story, where you're at in terms of the story, because you're doing episode after episode? Do you need to know pace? Do you need to... what can I do to help you do your job?
Well, yeah, because they're protective of these characters. They're probably 100% very protective of who these characters are.
Yeah, so that's exactly what I did, and that's exactly what I do with these guys. If there's a... I know they have a strong opinion. I know they're short sometimes with directors, and directors sometimes don't say what they really feel like because they're worried that it's not going to be what they like, therefore being somewhat intimidated, and if they smell fear, they're not inspired.
Right.
So, you know, I've just really took to heart what Paul had taught me and had those conversations. give a note, you're coming from a truthful place, as opposed to a fear-based note.
Well, you're lucky in that your classroom was the set itself, which there's no better classroom to do this.
No doubt. I'm so fortunate. I mean, I've got to work with Spielberg. I've got to work with the Wachowskis. I've got to work with Roger Donaldson. I've been so lucky to be able to be on a set as a stuntman and just watch and be a part of it, be in front of the camera, but behind it, planning it. How does that relate to the story? Mm-hmm. And ultimately see how an actor and director interpret it has really been valuable.
Well, I got to tell you, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I'm looking forward to the more and more things you've got coming out, these TV shows, and you tell me there's another feature coming. So can you tell us about what timetable till we might see that?
Well, you know, we're in the process of sending it out to agencies right now. It's called Sanctuary, so I'm hoping in the next 3-4 months we'll have an actor attached and we can start to nail down a start date.
Well, we hope you'll keep in touch. I'm looking forward to maybe getting out there and seeing you guys in action sometime. And, you know, here at Upcoming Disc, you're just helping us to make our job easier by giving us some cool stuff to watch.
Well, I appreciate your time and also the fans for watching the movie.
Oh, they're out there, trust me.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much. You have yourself a good rest of the week. I know you're busy, and I'm so grateful that you took the time out to chat with us.
All right. Thank you.
All right. You take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.